I'm Georgia Galanoudis, President of New York Women in Communications. Welcome to the New York Wiki Women Heard Changemakers podcast. This is for the communications community where I have the privilege of talking to female changemakers and inviting them to share stories, stories of resilience and grace while navigating change. In this episode, I'm chatting with Linda Boff. She is Chief Marketing Officer at GE, General Electric. Linda has had a marvelous and impactful career that includes being CMO of iVillage Properties, that's part of NBC Universal. She's had senior roles at Citigroup and Porta Novelli, that's just to name a couple. She's been named Adweek Grand Brand Genius in 2017. I just love that title. You need a t-shirt with that on it. You need the whole thing. And obviously near and dear to us at New York Wiki, Linda was honored in 2016 with a New York Wiki Matrix Award. If you don't know Linda, or you've not heard her speak, which I think would be surprising, but then you're in for a treat. She is smart. She's kind, incredibly effective at what she does, and I think truly a model of leadership in the world today. Welcome, Linda. I'm really looking forward to chatting to you today.
Georgia, thank you so much. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. It was a life highlight to stand on that stage and win the Matrix Award. It's a moment I'll never forget. And I love the work that you and your team do. It's inspiring. It's inspiring to me. And I notice so many other women early, mid, and later in their career. So it's great to be here.
Thank you so much. And we recently hosted you at our Building Bridges, Cultivating Connections and Communications Comms Week event. That was in partnership with Reagan Communications. And you really did speak about the transformative journey that GE is on as we think about transforming and leading with grace. So this is such a pertinent conversation for us to have. You spoke about how the organization is now moving into establishing itself with these three distinct entities and the journey you're on. And this is really the premise of this podcast. I'm really excited for you to share some of your learning, some of the things that you've been going through. It's this type of transformation that's great to talk about, but particularly because we know it's not easy. And it's definitely not easy to do it with your humanity intact, which you have clearly done. Can you tell our audience, especially for those that may not know, a little bit about the transformative journey that GE is on, the role that you're playing in that, and where are you in that journey right now, Linda?
Yeah, no, I love talking about this because it is a little bit of a pinch me experience. I've been at GE nearly two decades. I did not, in the early part of my GE career, imagine that we would ever see a GE that existed in three versus one. And of course, over the years, we've spun divisions. GE Lighting is no longer part of GE. GE Appliances is no longer part of GE. But 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, we announced that GE would separate into three publicly traded independent companies, an aerospace company that we now call GE Aerospace, a healthcare company that spun earlier this year, GE Healthcare, and an energy company called GE Vernova. And it was big news. There are other companies out there, Johnson & Johnson and Kellogg, who you see splitting into separate companies. For us, this was about driving focus. So being able to focus deliberately on a particular industry, allocate capital in that regard, ensure that we were making the right decisions for our customers and the customers where that technology mattered the most. And frankly, even for our employees to be able to join a pure aerospace company or a pure healthcare company. There was also an investor component. The investors have a lot of appreciation for focus, and the financial results we've seen in our stock, et cetera, are nice evidence of that. To get to the maybe more interesting part of your question, now that folks are kind of grounded in what we're up to, it has been it really has been sort of a once in a lifetime experience, because I truly love, like, a big part of my heart is here at GE. I fell in love with the company when I joined it, because the work that we do to help people travel safely around the world, you know, thanks to our jet engines and, you know, turn on the lights so that you could listen to this podcast and, you know, be able to get diagnosis from our machines, is work that's very humbling. It's not easy work to do. It's important that we do it precisely and safely and reliably. So I have a ton of heart for the company. And I very much, Georgia, want these three companies to have the very best of what I think has been that DNA of GE, and to give them the foundation on which to build what their futures are going to be. They'll be different. I mean, that's the whole idea, right? They'll have that opportunity. But the role I've been playing since we announced this a couple of years ago is that of helping each of the three think through what their brand strategy and go-to-market is going to be, what those teams are going to look like. Frankly, the overall narrative of GE going from one to three, the why, and probably more importantly, the why it matters, right? We know why it matters to us and to our stakeholders. Why does it matter to the world? So it's been an amazing, amazing, 24 months or so.
It must be very gratifying also to know that you've helped establish the building blocks from which these three will emerge and find their own way in the world, right? That evolution of the DNA, the core at the center, but how it's going to manifest moving forward. I can imagine you're going to get quite a bit of delight in watching that. How does that feel for you to have? It's almost like birthing babies that you're going to see go out into the world.
It's funny you say that. A colleague of mine talks about what we're going through, like getting your kids ready to go to college, right? You spend 17, 18 years, you know, you talk about building blocks, you know, trying to establish a set of what is right and wrong and give them a sense of pride and ambition, but then they're going to make their own decisions. And that is not a bad analogy in some ways. I am beyond proud of the work that my team and I have had the privilege to do in how this brand goes to market. I think the GE brand, and obviously I'm quite prejudiced, has a real humanity and accessibility, particularly for an industrial company, right? It's not a cold conglomerate, right? It's an approachable company. There's a lot of trust in the work that we do. There's trust in the people who work here. So, you know, you ask how it feels. You know, I've had two kids that I've had to, you know, hug and say goodbye to as they go to college. And now they're on the other side of that. And it harkens to that feeling in some ways, this sense of pride with a little bit of a hope I did a good enough job, you know, hope they're going to be okay. I have more than hope in this case. You know, the companies are in fantastic shape, but it's not a unfamiliar kind of way of thinking about it. You let go.
Yeah. You let go and off they go. Has to have had, as most of these transformative journeys, ups and downs and a little bit of everything in between. Yeah. I'd love for you to share perhaps a little bit of what might have been challenging along the way, either for you personally or perhaps for your team. How you managed through that? Are there any lessons that you learned from that would be valuable even for our audience to hear as you've navigated your way to where you even are today?
you know, every career has its moments where you look back and say, oh my God, I would have done that differently or what have you. I would point to one particular moment, which is about 5 years ago, five and change, we changed CEOs. A gentleman named Larry Culp became our CEO and still is. I'd never worked with Larry before. Turns out he is, you know, maybe the world's greatest CEO. He is so good. And I've learned so much from him. And he has, without a doubt, put GE in the position that we are in today. But 5 years ago, when Larry came in, the company had some real financial challenges. We were highly levered. We have since reduced our debt by $100 billion, but we were, right? That's big numbers. We were highly levered. All our businesses were not all performing as we needed them to. COVID had not yet hit, but, you know, we had to weather that. And there were real challenges. And I when I think back on that time, you know, the 5 year ago me, I think it would have, honestly, Georgia, in some ways been easier to leave than to stay, because to stay meant to stay and fight our way back. And, you know, 132 years later, we've seen what good looks like, we've seen what not good looks like. But when you're fighting and you're playing defense, it is hard. Every day is hard. You're fighting for your reputation. You're fighting, to your point, and I'll get to this in a second, to inspire people and hold on to people and give them a reason to stay. And you kind of, you know, they're naysayers. And, you know, in, when you're down, you know, the naysayers come out. And it's hard. And that was hard. What makes it so much sweeter today is that it was hard won, right? That we battled together, that as a team, a leadership team, and my own comms and marketing team, you know, we decided that, you know, this was a company that meant so much to so many people. And we got very clear on what our narrative was. We were consistent. We made it a priority to do, not talk, right? When we had something to talk about, it was after we had actually accomplished something. So, you know, a lot of, you know, thinking about how we were going to articulate the challenge. And then we adopted a mindset that is based on the Japanese idea of Kaizen, which is all around continuous improvement. And every day can be better than the one before, but you work together, you work horizontally, you respect the people closest to the work. And, you know, 5 years later, I couldn't be prouder. And I think had we not had that, you know, challenge, you know, good doesn't feel as good unless you know what not so good felt like. So lessons, I am an optimist and that helps me. And I think it helps the team. I truly try to look for the bright lights and to bring them forward. I'm grateful by nature and appreciative. And I try to share that appreciation in small and big ways as we went forward. And then I think I tried to help the team not lose sight of their value in this larger transformation. And everybody on the team played a role there, a really big role, really foundational. And, you know, we kept reminding ourselves of that. I don't know. We're talking about, you know, sending your kids to college. I often think it's the stuff, you know, if you're lucky, your parents taught you, say please, say thank you, be grateful, work hard, be appreciative, you know, be on the field together. I mean, they're such basic things, but I try to keep them in mind. And something I often say, and again, try to practice, is presume good intent. Presume that people around you are there to do goodness with you, because it's really easy when things aren't going so well to get a little paranoid, to be a little suspicious. Where does that get you? Nowhere good.
Yeah, nowhere good. I have to imagine too, having weathered through some of this challenging period 5 years ago and on must have actually set you up quite well for COVID, because it was just one more difficult, challenging. But if you had built some foundation of how to work together through a challenging environment, I'm going to imagine that it may have set you up quite well, at least as a leadership team, to be able to have the language with each other to communicate. Would that be a safe assumption?
So, I mean, COVID was so hard on so many, right? I mean, it just, you know, at times it feels like a fever dream, except that it wasn't, right? You know, millions of people lost their lives and, you know, got very sick as a result of this. But I think it did do many of the things you're saying in terms of, you know, how to play together as a team. As a manufacturing company, we were very aware of the fact that a number of our colleagues still went to the office every single day. They went to the factory every single day. We, as it turned out, manufactured ventilators. And you may remember in the early days of the pandemic, ventilators were in very high demand. It was a tiny, tiny part of our healthcare business. We realized the importance of this and we ramped up our production. And we had people driving across the country to take shifts so that they could do their part. Proud of that effort. You know, we created a fund for our employees who had been affected. We all kind of, you know, contributed, you know, took a little pay cut, what have you. I mean, so you do things that are the right thing to do, and you remember what the right thing to do is. But I do think that grounding was of how we want to lead was helpful during COVID.
Yeah. And then it sounds like got even more solidified and established even through that to set you up through this latest transition. You know, I love that you bring up some of these statements that, right, make your mother proud, have each other's back. To your point, they're so simple.
Yeah.
But they're everyday reminders that we need to bring our humanity into the workplace. And Linda, your grace and your wisdom here is really powerful, because as women and women leaders, we have, I think, an obligation to demonstrate and lead with that. That is not something that women only own, that is sure. But I do think there are characteristics that we can turn to and lean on, our sense of gratitude, of grace, of embracing those around us. And I think the assume good intent is very embedded in that too. That spirit really helps guide that. When you think about how has that, obviously, it's in your home life and it's in your work life. Are there any moments when you've seen these things intersect in such a way that it sort of comes full circle for you, your balance between your home life and your work life, Linda? How do you reconcile that?
It's never easy. It's never easy for anybody. It's not easy for single parents, for dual working parents. In our case, just to be specific, I was one of the lucky ones in that my husband was a stay-at-home dad for a lot of our child-rearing days. And that is a privilege, and I will never take it for granted. You know, we tried, I was just giving somebody this advice the other day, we tried to be pretty practical about it. So family is very important to both of us. But so is work is very important to me also. And I kind of made the decision very early on, you know, after my daughter was born and I went back to work, that I was I had to make some choices. And I think it doesn't matter what you pick. I've said this to so many new moms and dads, pick something. In our case, we picked family dinner as our thing. I'm an early riser. I start work really, really early in the morning. It's when I'm actually the most productive. So the kids did not see me in the morning. Now, I don't think the kids cared that they saw me in the morning or not, but I gave that up, right? I gave up, you know, the cuddles in the morning. But the flip side of that was every night that I could, I was home and we made dinner. Now, as you might imagine, probably the same for you, that wasn't 7 days a week. Couldn't have been. Travel, business, you know, et cetera. But to hear them tell it now, my 28 and 30-year-old kids will say with pride, mom went to work early, but every night we had family dinner. So that's their memory of this. And I love that because along the way you make sacrifices. Of course, it's the nature of, you know, how do you do both well? It's you can't. Any given day, you might be lucky to do one well. But I'm a big believer in the intentionality of picking something. And the other thing I did, I decided to coach my daughter in soccer. So when she was young, there were no women coaching soccer in my teeny little town in Westchester, not a one. And we went to a game. She was probably 5 or 6 years old. And the coach at the time sat all the girls so that he could win the game at age 6. And I thought, well, that's not so good. Now, I am not a good, I'm a sports fan. I'm not a good athlete. But I went in the next week and I signed up to coach. And I was the first woman in town to coach, for whatever that's worth. And I stayed and coached the team for 8 years. And, you know, this is a weekend thing. I mean, you know, it's not the big leagues, but it was really important to me. And when my daughter and I talk about it, it's a very dear part of our growing up experience.
That's just magical. I love that. And I love that as a confident, effective leader, woman, parent, you have a partner that you can lean on. And I think having the wherewithal and the willingness sometimes to relinquish and allow the other to take control in some places of our lives, that is not always an easy thing to do, but clearly you've done that incredibly well. So kudos to you and to your husband.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real for a moment in that is, you know, in doing that, what that really means is you relinquish, you know, somebody doing it the same way you would do it, and you then become okay with it. It's not that you're, wow, this is great. You know, he's dressing them or, you know, doing exactly what I would be doing. But I think that's, and maybe there's a lesson there, Georgia, in some ways for work as well, right?
Yes.
You can't succeed if you need to do it all. You can't. You need people around you who are better at you, better than you at many things, who have a different skill set, and then you need to be okay with it. And my husband was a much more patient parent than I ever could have been, but he did things differently than I would have, and I learned to be okay with it. Still do.
Same. I'm in the same situation. My husband stayed home and raised the kids, and that was a very powerful lesson to learn and to just let it go. Yes, love it. I want to change topics just a little bit. I really don't think I can have this conversation with you without asking about the power of storytelling. It's important to you. I know that it is. And its ability to engender trust. And I think Jihee has been, over the years, a just remarkable beacon of light in the world for brands to do this. And when I think a lot about where we are today, the lack of trust in our society, the overwhelming feelings of loneliness and isolation that we are living with, I really fantasize, I guess, about bringing more positive human stories forward, because they are out there, they are real, and bring them to the forefront. Because I think, when I think about the beginnings of community, I think about sitting around the campfire and storytelling. And I believe that humans as individuals and brands have the power to do that. Can you speak to a little bit of what you've learned about the power of storytelling and its potential, and any thoughts you have on that about its ability to actually bring people together and build community?
So I, like you, am a huge believer in the power of storytelling. So let's maybe unpack why. I think that brands have a heavy lift. You want your customers, all your stakeholders to know what you do. Hopefully you succeed in convincing them to do something with you. Buy your product, buy your stock, come to work, you know, all of those kinds of things. You know, as brand leaders, we are trying to drive growth, and you drive growth by putting a value prop out there that is compelling. That being said, I don't think anything is more compelling than a story. Because if you only stick with what you want people to know, not what you want them to feel, I don't think it's very memorable. I truly believe, and I don't think it's all, I don't think it's a leap of faith at all. People remember stories. They tell each other stories. And you know, for me, I work at a company that is chock-a-block with stories that go all the way back to Edison and his light bulb, you know, well over a century ago. And so to me, the idea of storytelling is to find where that connection will be, where you can tell somebody something that perhaps they didn't know before, but do it in a way that they'll feel something that they perhaps didn't feel before. And I think it's both what you show, I think it's who tells that story. And that's been something we've tried over the years to think hard about. You know, sometimes we're the best people to tell the story. Sometimes we're not. Sometimes it's a blogger who writes about science and technology. Sometimes it's a YouTube influencer. Sometimes it's a comedian. Sometimes it's a musician who wants to cut a record about the sounds of industry. So I think as a storyteller and as somebody who, as I say, like you, loves storytelling, I think it begins with your truth, right? When you sit around the campfire, so to speak, what is that truth that you're trying to help people know? And at GE, I think we know ourselves pretty well. We know our DNA. We want always our marketing to be as innovative as the company, as our technology is, as our founder Edison was. And that's a bit of a forever brief for us. And I believe that enables us, because that's such a steady force, to then pull that in so many creative directions that allow for that storytelling to come to life.
It's amazing. I have followed GE for many years. Content has been a common thread throughout my career, and just watched some of that storytelling come to life. I am excited to see what the three new entities take with them. Particularly, I've got a special interest in GE Healthcare, such a powerful and important endeavor in the world today. Nothing more important, I think, right now than our ability to use technology and innovation to drive better outcomes. So important. Before we end here, Linda, I want to ask you, I know you are still very much embedded in what you are in right now, but what comes next? Or what has gravitational pull for you? And what are the things that you know are going to be present in your next career and the next part of your journey?
I love the question. So thank you so much. But it's both easy and hard to answer. So the easy part of what I'll do next, because once we spin these companies sometime early in Q2, I have made it very clear that I'll go on to the next thing. You know, your work is never done, but I think my work here is done, and it's time for the kids to go to college, so to speak, as we've been saying. So the easy part is I see possibilities everywhere. I love to build. I, you know, love to find ways, as you and I have been talking about, to bring brands to life through story. And it's essential for me to work with people that are like-minded, that are energy generators, not energy detractors. I know exactly the kinds of people who I do the best with. So that part is super easy, right? And you feel it. You can just feel that. So you could do that in a million different places. 20 years at GE, I am trying to be very open to possibility. Very open to possibility, because I think it can come in any number of different forms. And I'm going to, you know, spend the time after GE figuring out where that comes together in a way that has given me, that lights me up, that has allowed me to sort of break off a piece of my heart the way I have for GE. And I have to say, I'm pretty excited about it. I'm pretty excited about what I don't know.
I'm excited for you. And I love that you bring forward a sort of a pillar or a guiding light in what is going to be next for you, the energy of the people around you. Because I think coming out of COVID, it was not something that I ever really thought about before. I felt like I had endless energy. Now, obviously, I've aged a little bit too, but I do think there is the COVID factor and the preciousness of our energy and our energy for everything that we want to do in our lives. And we need that from each other. People fuel us, environments fuel us. One last question for you. I'm just so glad that you're going to use that as a guiding light for yourself again. But where do you get fuel from? What fuels you up when you find yourself a little depleted, perhaps? Are there people you turn to? Is there art? Is there culture? Linda, what is it that then fills you up?
Yeah, I mean, my kids are endless sources of love and energy. And I, you know, they brighten every moment of every day. And I would spend even more time with them to their chagrin than I probably already do. But I get energy. I know this sounds trite, but I get energy from people and ideas and learning. I love spending time with folks who are interested in ideas and creating something new. And that is in the space of technology or art or sports. I'm just energized by the possibility of new. So I do spend a good amount of time just seeking out people or spending time with people who I know have that view. Back to storytelling, I get energy from artwork. I love walking around museums, particularly modern and contemporary ones. I get energy from theater. I get energy from, I'm a voracious reader. So I'm always reading, or I should say listening. I'm an audible person. So I think I get energy from stories and people in areas that are adjacent to what I do versus right smack in it. And I like being able to apply, because I think that's where things stay interesting. You know, if you've got the blinders, if you're, you know, just so involved with the actual constant concerns of your job and you don't look to the right and you don't look to the left, you get a little monolithic.
You do. That is wonderful advice, I think, also for our listeners. Thank you, Linda, so much for this conversation today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I am so excited for what lies ahead for you, as are you, and I can feel the palpable energy of it. On behalf of our listeners, thank you for joining us today.
Honestly, it's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hockheiser-Ilkovich. Thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast. Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grise, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thank you to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.